Blog Talk Radio.
Ain't no stopping us now.
vocabulary to others. You don't need to have a philosophical bent to grasp. There are three little words. We want to let the world know that these words describe what we mean and what we are determined to do about racial injustice. One is the word all. We don't want some of our rights. We don't want a few token handouts here and there. We want all of our rights. There are some people who say that we need to go back to Africa. And then there are some others who tell Negroes in the South, leave the South. You can't be free, so get out. But down in Alabama, in Mississippi, in Georgia, South Carolina, we are saying something else. We want all of our rights, and we want all of our rights here in Alabama, in Mississippi, in South Carolina. No, we are not willing to wait another 25 years for our rights. We can hear voices telling us to slow up. We can hear voices telling us to cool up. Our only answer in conversation turn must be that we have cooled off too long, and if we keep cooling off, we'll end up in a deep freeze. We must go on and say, no, what we are saying to this nation is that we want all of our rights. We want them here, and we want all of them not next year, not next week, but we want them now, at this hour. This is what we're saying.
What your life can truly be. Shining star for you to see. What your life can truly be.
Shining star for you to see what your life can truly be. It is happy, happy, happy federal holiday, Juneteenth. Why they call it Juneteenth? I don't know. Maybe that's a South Carolina thing. But it's Juneteenth. It is the day of the freeing of African Americans from slavery, June 19th, whatever it was. It was so long. I tell you what, it was somewhere around the 1800s when this transpired. It is a long way to freedom, and we're not there yet. We're still working on it. We're still trying to get it together before we turn it loose. And we were talking about the other day. We were talking about crisis identity, and that's something that African Americans have faced for years and years. In years, crisis identity. That's one of the things that we have to deal with in terms of our psychosocialization in America being put into a position that makes you just go crazy. Let's hear what the preacher got to say by a crisis identity problem person called Donald Trump. Let's hear what this preacher has to say about that.
To be honest, this is probably going to be the, and I'm saying this at this table, the most pro-black president that we've had in our lifetime.
So had that asked me, I would have said, you know, before you praise this president for being pro-black, before you praise this president for caring about ethnic communities and marginalized populations, do your homework. Well, some of y'all didn't do your homework. They didn't do their homework. So let me tell you just a little bit of research, not just him personally, but also some of his policies. Perhaps before they went and sat at this table, they should have done their homework. Because if they had done their homework, they would have known that President Trump has ramped up mass incarceration by instructing Attorney General Jeff Sessions to revise revitalized the war on drugs. They would have known that of the 87 picks for federal judges, 85 have been white and just one has been black and one has been Hispanic. They would have known that President Trump supported the Department of Justice engaging in unlawful voter purges, making it difficult for blacks to go and vote. They would have known that Trump is ending protection for predatory lenders, which disproportionately harm black people. They would have known that he is ignoring the affordable housing crisis by ordering HUD to triple the rents of poor tenants in public housing, which mostly affect black people. Do your homework. They would have known that he is proposing cutting $200 billion over the next 10 years from supplemental nutrition assistance programs that will bring more hunger in black and brown communities. They would have known that Trump is worsening the health of black communities through environmental deregulation, which disproportionately harms black people through exposure to pollution. Now, that's just a few on the policy side, but you don't have to go too far to ask what about him personally would make me know that he is not pro-black. I'm glad you asked, because in 1970, Trump's real estate company tried to avoid renting apartments to black tenants and gave preferential treatment to white tenants. He began his 2016 presidential campaign with a speech disparaging Mexican immigrants as criminals and rapists. Y'all remember that? In 2016, he said, of people of color, you are living in poverty, your schools are no good, you have no jobs. Hold on, I'm a product of HBCU, and I'm a product of black school systems and black teachers. Don't you ever tell me that my black schools are... Hold on, I ain't done. He says you have no jobs, so what do you have to lose from electing me? In 2017, Trump said 15,000 recent immigrants from Haiti all have AIDS, and 40,000 Nigerians once seeing the United States would want to go back to their huts in Africa. He spent years suggesting that the nation's first black president was not a citizen of these United States. He called Puerto Ricans, who's criticized his administration's response to Hurricane Maria, he called them politically motivated ingrates. Hold on, but he called those who marched beside white supremacists in Charlottesville, Virginia, he called them very fine people. He hired Steve Bannon, a white nationalist, as his chief strategist. He called Haiti and other African nations S-hole countries, and he's taking credit for an economy that has not been built on his administration, but was built on the backs of 8 years of hard work under the Obama administration. Negroes, please, don't you come up in here talking about this is the most pro-black president that you have ever seen, when the record suggests that he cares nothing about people of color.
That is part of crisis, identity crisis in the African-American community. That is what causes these crises, is how perception that people receive. A baby can receive a perception that they're not loved if you don't hug them and kiss them and clothe them and feed them and wash them and play with them and hug, you know, show them love. A baby perception could be that I'm not loved. And if you treat children one special, get all the attention and all get spoiled and can do anything they want, and one's restricted, one, that child can grow up with an identity crisis that I'm not loved, I'm not beautiful, I'm not nice, I'm not handsome, I'm not good. And the other child might be seen, perceived to be seen as the most, the best child. So we have a lot of discussion. Identity crisis is a tremendous effect on people's mental health. You'd be surprised how psychotic and psychosis and schizophrenia and depression, anxiety, introvertedness, where people just not talk to nobody. All these mental conditions come from identity crisis. People go into crisis mode based on their conditioning and what they're experiencing. And we're going to further talk about this as well. We have our brother on here again, brother Mr. Stuart Fields, as we're going to bring him in, and we're going to talk about crisis identity, and we're going to lead into what we can do, what we're doing, different aspects of what's happening, what's going on in the community. Mr. Stuart Fields, an anointed hand. Give him a nice hand.
Grand Rising. Glad to be here with the family today. Can y'all hear me?
We hear you very loud and clear. We hear you very loud and clear. Your situation is stable?
Actually, I'm driving, but I'm okay as far as the talk.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. I want to bring the man himself who brought you onto the scene. I don't know, you wanted to address identity crisis. It has a tremendous amount of complexity. It comes from different aspects of one's life experience. It can start as a child where you don't feel loved. So you start to think you're not beautiful, you're not smart, you're not kind, you're not the good one. You dig where I'm coming from? So, you know, even babies and children.
Yes, you know, with identity crisis, especially in the Black community, is very rampant. It's something that we need to talk about and discuss a lot more, right? And it all starts with we don't know who we are. Like, you have to know who you are to have your identity. If you don't know who you are, anybody can put any identity on you. But when you know who you are, then can't nobody fool you. You're not going to have identity crisis once you know who you are, right? And this is why we have to get back to going within ourselves, right? Starting from within and coming outwards, right? Because one thing that the ancients used to always teach is know thyself. You have to know who you are from the inside. And a lot of times, you know, we go through stuff in life where we have trauma and we have pain that's inside of us, right? But we never address that. Sometimes we don't address it. We just let it sit there and linger. And then that's why people have midlife crisis and meltdowns and stuff like that, because they don't address that trauma that they may have went through at a young age, right? So it's all combined, the trauma that we suffer, the post-traumatic slave syndrome that we go through, the PTSD, right? Because living in our communities, we have suffered from PTSD, right? We have, because we have seen so much violence in our community. It's so much that we have seen. And also, I believe that trauma can be passed down generationally through your DNA if it's never addressed. Right, so this is this is a Pandora's box once you open this up, because there's so many different avenues that you can go down to find so many areas that you can go. It's a lot, man. It's a big conversation, and it's multi-layered, and but I'm glad that y'all actually discussing it, because
it is so big. I'm gonna bring in a man with a brain big enough to handle the question and come up with some kind of answers. And I hope he's feeling much better. And I hope he's ready to go. The man himself, the host with the most, the host of the Black Business Billionaires Network Club. And because I'm retiring, y'all know I got to get that yacht and go somewhere where nobody knows my name. Mr. Shalik Reed. Let's give him a nice hand.
Now, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you for the community first, and thank God for having the opportunity to be alive, be blessed with health, and my tooth is healing, and a lot of people reach out. But I definitely want to say thank you to Dr. Robinson and the members of the Neo Nation community, and all of those who are in support of the Neo Nation vision, as well as those who are in support of just a
vision of togetherness. And our special thanks to the guest, Anointed Hands, Mr. Stuart Fills, and he has also guests that he's possibly brought along with him. I'm not sure, but this is his night. I usually just sit back and just enjoy the lessons that I learned, man, from Big Brother, because it's definitely, he's shown me a lot, man, in terms of leadership and the difference between a boss and a leader. And leadership is not a dictatorship. And oftentimes, you know, when we talk about identity crisis, people, we've come to get stuck on the concept of dictatorship in terms of leadership, which involves everyone. And leadership also, you know, doesn't dictate, but they illustrate by example, and they include everyone, and everyone is invited, and everyone is able to share along with the process of building economic development and a stronger community. But I just want to just say, man, for everybody that's listening and viewing, this brother, Mr. Fills, Stuart Fills, I'm not stroking his ego, but what I am saying is that this is he to me. He's in my book when it comes to the Jay-Z, when it comes to those who have made their mark and the example and left behind a blueprint. He's the person that I look forward to. I look. He's my leader. He's a leader that I can follow. He's a leader that to me is a man of integrity. He's a man that has provided a vision and an example that to me that includes everyone. You know what I'm saying? I've been sharing the word with other people. There's someone who's online that I stay in contact with, and I told her she's a young entrepreneur. She'll possibly be interviewed and be connected with the multi-level marketing process that you'll be talking about if you get into it. Like I said, Mr. Fills, this is your show. But her name is Sharita Holmes, and she's an entrepreneur, and she has her own clothing brand, clothing line, and she's out. She's not in New York City, but she's closely connected, and she's listening to the show as well. But I just want to just say, man, Dr. Robinson, Winborn, Mr. Hall, even Jaquan Diaz, and the coach, Coach Morale, everyone that I haven't mentioned, even Ms. Owens from her consulting agency, providing jobs for the community, the Tron case, and Reap More Network. I just want to just say to everyone before I hand the mic over is that this is an opportunity, man, and it's history in the making. And no history, to me, it's one thing to look at others, but we have the opportunity, and that's what I realized. When there's an opportunity before us, it's not a question of what others are not doing. It's a question of how do we become the example and make a difference. And that's the whole concept. It's like oftentimes you hear debates and you hear people gain money off of gossip and publicity. This person is not doing this and this one is not doing that. But it's like, you know, at the same token, it's a question of what are we doing, you know? And I'm not really, you know, I'm all supportive of what can we do to make an impact and make a difference. And that's what I believe. That's what this is the blessing, man. We have life. We have the ability to contribute something positive to someone else and to the community and make a difference. And so with that said, I just want to say thank you and thank everyone here for even being that example, because I believe that what we have shown is not an act of something to be glorified unto ourselves. But what we are showing is an example of what can be done in terms of building a community, building economics, taking steps forward towards contributing something positive to humanity, to others, and putting our best foot forward and learning from our past, learning from the past, period, in terms of how we can progress and move forward. So with that said, I just want to say, everyone, enjoy the show. I'm listening. I humble myself, and I just want to be a student right now to the experience that's being shared, because this is, to me, a very special experience, because it's a connection to Africa, and it involves the aspect of being able to generate and build an economy by, you know, economic development, because it's something big. This is international import and export we're talking about here. We're talking about selling products or negotiation of how we are going to sell African products, juices, beverages, and all of these things right here. So it just, this is where history is made, right here, right now. And everyone is invited, and I thank you all for tuning in. And this is Big Shot Reed. I'm just going to take a back seat, and I just want to tell everybody enjoy the show. Dr. Robinson, it's your call.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that, brother. Always wonderful to hear from you. It's good to see your good spirits. Your teeth is healing, and you're feeling much better. You sound much better. And I pray that everything works out with your healing process. And you always got wisdom, brother. You got that young man wisdom. And, you know, that's what's needed. And you're really making my life easier, because I'm getting ready to retire, brother, and hand everything over to you.
I'll give you videos from the yacht.
This is one thing I'll be allowed.
Right? Listen, and I'm going to be brief, because I know I said this right. But all I'm just saying is this one thing I have learned. We never retire. It just becomes a lot more easier in the process. But life is about, life is to me a journey that you, it's just a fulfilling journey that it's never ending. Twists and turns. You never retire, man. You never retire. It just, certain things it can roll off of us like duck feathers, as I would say. But then the journey still continues, man, and there's so many wonderful things that you can learn, man, along the path, and especially looking at people and saying, damn, you know, a lot of people are less fortunate, you know, and it just causes to me being humble, you know, being able to say, wow, you know, there is light at the end of the tunnel. So that's all I just wanted to say, man.
Amen.
I mean, I know you're sharing, it's just my opinion. I know you're saying you're retiring because you deserve that. You have a historical journey, and I admire, and I'm thankful, man. I'm thankful to be able to know that I'm able to talk with a brother who has made himself accessible to the people, where I can ask questions. You know, and that's
now you bring
saying.
Now
that's
you bring joy to my heart. And tears in my eyes.
And there you go. You got a song? You got a song you want to sing too? Let me hear the song, man. Come on, Mr. Fields, man. I'm waiting for you too, man. Thank you, man. Thank you.
And guess what? I just want to also mention to the listeners that Mr. Eric Adams, running for the mayor of New York City, he's the front runner. He's a former lieutenant in the police department in New York City. He's a brother that's been in the council, a brother that's been the borough president of Brooklyn. He's a brother that's been talking up. And when he was 14, he was beaten by cops, and he thought that he could join the police force and operate from that level on. So that's Mr. Eric Adams running for New York City mayor. He's going to stop by and give us some words of encouragement, and we're going to hear something about his candidacy and what he plans on doing about New York City. I also want to do, there's a brother that I always look up to, my mentor. You know, when I was a little boy, I said, wow, he's one person I want to be like. And he even got the dongle, damn near got my same name, Mr. Ronald A. Robinson. I want to bring him in and get some historical facts from him. He's a great teacher and very well-known brother, extremely intelligent about everything.
If you ever looked up to me, I was on a step stool.
That's a good one.
Well, you told him in a tree. I ain't going to tell nobody about that.
Good evening, everyone. Listen, just came in a little late listening, but I got the gist of our opportunities here in international trade. I was an import export in the 80s, and so on, and gave a business investment conference in Africa and African countries at that time. But the plight to do business with Africa has always been in the air. Okay, there's some people who have gone and successfully done. There's some people who have gone and lost everything, you know. But I believe that is really our own, one of our only options as far as succeeding and freeing ourselves, you know, in this country and so on. But one other thing that we need to do, and this is very important, all these holidays that are coming, that come around in our names, whether it's Juneteenth, Martin Luther King's birthday, you know, Black Liberation Day, Malcolm X's birthday, you know, and so on, all these things that the enemy uses on us so we can go out and spend with them. During the civil rights movement, we got our right to go into their stores and spend our money in their stores, and then we went broke. And we're still spending money in their stores.
Wow.
And
wow.
Now on the holidays, we spend money in the bars, partying, you know, partying with
identity
each other.
Identity crisis, trying to buy everything you can get, trying to drink everything you can drink. Identity crisis, right?
You know, Martin Luther King's Day, go and shop in my store. And we do that rather than paying attention to what we really have to pay attention to is the education of our children, prayer, you know, and being involved in our community. And I get very pissed off. You know, when these holidays come through and I go to Jamaica, I go to Harlem, I go to other places, and I see so many people in the streets, you know, not so many people in organizations trying to each one teach one, spending their money with somebody that hates you.
Wow. Interesting.
You know? All right. So we gotta think. I've been using the word debrief lately. And I mean that. We need to be debriefed by those who are woke, you know, and debrief ourselves, wake up, you know.
Amen. You know something, Ron? I'm glad you say that, because we're going to get debriefed by the man himself. I brought him on tonight as a special guest. No other, I'm going to call him Minister Jaquan Diaz, because he goes into the spiritual in the natural, and he explained to us, and I text him some messages, some things I want him to talk about in terms of identity crisis and how that works. Mm-hmm. When God tell you one thing and man tell you another thing, and who should you believe? So let's bring on the man himself, Minister Diaz. Just John Diaz. Let's bring him on.
Thank you. I'm humbled. I'm currently washing clothes right now in the laundromat, so I'll step out so I can get this.
You're a busy man, and I appreciate you, brother, calling in, you know, doing what you're doing. I got you. I called you in the last minute, you know, and you come through for me. I appreciate that highly.
Yeah,
I
want
to ask you a question. You didn't get the chance to read the text, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. I want you to basically – we're talking about identity crisis, but this is Juneteenth. This is the day of freedom of the slaves, African-American, black people, whatever, been going through identity crisis. And, you know, we are very religious people. We believe in the Creator. But the Creator told us one thing, society told us another thing, and we have conflicting feelings about who we are and what we are. And, you know, and I wonder sometimes about people of faith, why do they put so much tension into what man say when God says something different, something better?
Well, I have prepared a really good topic on that. Well, I don't think I prepared it, but when I read the text, I kind of was inspired to tell a couple stories. Actually, I'm going to just let it just flow out. So I would have to say, like, when it comes to the identity crisis, and let's call it the Matrix, like, we're in a world that if you watch the movie The Matrix, when the man sat Neo down, which if you guys don't know already, the whole Matrix, it was inspired biblically. Neo, the one, the Messiah, the Trinity, the Holy Trinity. Nebuchadnezzar was the name of the ship. Mount Zion was the name where they was residing at. everything is biblical subs. The thing is, people watch the movie and get so action and don't see what they're blatantly telling you. Basically, we've been created in, we're in a matrix, and the devil, he has created a rule over our eyes. He has created a false, like, world for us to, like, indulge in and give energy to. So when it comes to the holidays and where we spend our money and all the energy we put into it, it's from, one, repetition, family, generations, et cetera, ingrained in us. And then it's lack of education. If you tell somebody, listen, Christmas doesn't necessarily have to do with the birth of Jesus Christ. The man was in a manger when he was born, and he and they showed, and the North Star appeared, and it definitely wasn't the winter. He would have definitely froze to death in the desert. He would have been dead at the time when they said he was born. But if you look historically, it was more like maybe springtime, maybe the summer, that the actual birth of Christ was done. And to just keep it raw for what it is, because I'm not going to be biased, Christmas definitely has nothing to do with Christ at all. Like, the whole historical factor behind Christmas has nothing to do with the birth of Christ originally. So if we really want to commemorate the birth of Christ, we shouldn't be using a day that the powers to be, I'm not even going to say who they are, because they know who they are. They mastered that Christmas day. They anticipate for us to spend money on that Christmas day. And all the other holidays, it's like a budget around, what's it called, an expectancy of how much money we're going to spend on it. I watched my mom when I tried to make her give it up, and she kept talking about rent and everything up. I said, let's sacrifice the Christmas one day and just build something that we can make money off of. You know what she say? No, you can't give up Christmas. She spent over $2,000-$3,000 on gifts and everybody else and suffered for the year. Because that holiday was so ingrained in her that if I don't give a gift to someone or one of these kids, it's all over. That's not true. See the sacrifice? This is why every time I try to get into a spell, I always refer to what Christ said because it was so epic. He asked, who is on that coin? Man says, Caesar. He says, then get back onto Caesar's what is Caesar's. That's everything. Holidays. How they took all back. You can't half-ass give back to the man, or he's still going to have a leg in your life. That's what leeches and bloodsuckers do. They are going to think you rid yourself of the problem, and they're going to be sucking your life force from elsewhere. So one of the greatest statements of someone who stood up to this test, because if you know of Moses, Moses was the prophet far before King David. And King David was considered the man after God's own heart. Now, God gives titles to select prophets. And the reason, like, all of us could say we are friends of God. All of us could say we are friends of God. But when God makes it specific who's his friend, it's not to say nobody else is his friend. It's to say, that's my best friend. And Abraham was considered the friend of God. Moses was considered the man who heard God's voice. These are titles. So when it comes to David, the man of God's heart, why is he the man of God's heart? Because he knew the stories of Moses and those before, and he loved God in spirit. He wasn't the most built person. He was very fit because he had to tend to the sheep. He was calm and centered because he had to tend to the sheep. Sheep have multiple behaviors and are very sporadic. So David, from early on, having bigger brothers and everything, he matured faster and he was led through the Spirit. So what a lot don't know is how the Psalms, or what some call the Zabor, was being revealed to David. And when David was getting the inspiration, David's voice was so beautiful when he recited the Psalms that the earth, the trees, the birds, everything sang along with him, the praises to God. And his heart was so into it that it had power to it. These Psalms had power of healing behind them. So David, before he received revelation, he was considered Like, there are signs before a prophet becomes a prophet. If he's to be revealed revelation, that's a higher title than somebody who's being inspired. Meaning, Brother Ron Robinson, both Ron Robinsons, myself, we might get leakages from the divine source. Meaning, it's like a invisible umbilical cord connected between us and the all. So the creator, at times, dependent on your loyalty, dependent on your intentions, dependent on your love, if it's sincere, you can delve into knowledges directly from the creator himself. That's why the word to educate means to bring forth innate knowledge and bring it forward. It doesn't mean to teach you something new. It means to bring out innate knowledge and bring it forward. So that's what the creator is doing. The reason why he reveals purpose to us is for that factor. So when it came to David, I want to make it clear to you why he's the man after God's heart. Because in it all, there was a people called the Philistines, and they were terrorizing the Israelites, destroying everything, terrorizing them. Nobody could stop them. One of the leaders of this army, his name was Goliath. Now, Goliath, if you read the description, this man was 12 feet tall. Now, bloodlines determine he was probably part Nephilim. He could have been, so he was part giant. You know how he's going to be 12 feet tall, swinging a bastard sword. This man had a sword that was probably about 8 feet long, and when he swung it, he took down 6, 7, 8 people with one swing. No one was stopping him. He bust through the best type of armor that the Israelites had. Mind you, God revealed to them the power of metal. If you guys know that, metal did not originate on this planet. Metal is a type of metallic that comes from space, a meteorite. And it's actually defined in scripture when he said that he was going to change the momentum of power and send down the metal. He sent it. He sent it. He gave the Israelites that power. Yeah, I'm coming out. Hey. Okay, so he gave them that power, that military power. Yeah, so he when that happened, they relied on that power. Because if you roll to the story, you notice how when everybody fell, everybody was defeated by Goliath. Goliath walked to the Israelite army in confidence. I'm going to wipe the rest of y'all out. Send out your best fighters. Matter of fact, I could go over there and just beat on y'all, but I want you to send your best fighter out, and I'm going to embarrass him in front of everybody. Send your best fighter out. Now, Saul, being in who he was in position where he was jealous of David because that's out of contact. He's not jealous of David yet. He had no confidence in David. Samuel was the prophet who was inspired to pick David. So he was basically like Saul's spiritual advisor. But Saul started drifting. Saul started seeing the position that he was in as his own kingdom versus the fact that God gave him the kingdom. So David was the right king because his heart was not in it for him. It was in it all for God and for the sake of God, period. So now when he had to face Goliath and people saw his stature and David was small, they were shocked. They was like, this is an embarrassment. Like, well, Saul only let David go through with it because he already exhausted all his options. He had no option but to get from that seat and fight Goliath himself or watch his army perish. The last hope he had was David beating this creature in a one-on-one fight and preserving the rest of the Israelites. So David went forward. The first thing they ran forward to do is what? They put on the armor. All the armors could not fit on David. He shook them off. He took the armor off. He said, I don't need that armor today. I'm going out there with my sling alone. He went with his sling and the heart for God. He said, picture me fearing this Philistine that don't fear the fact that I worship the one true God of the universe. He's not afraid of me. He's not afraid of me right now. I don't fear him. And I'm going to show everybody today this Philistine son will perish. And he walked out there with confidence. No fear in his heart, but the fact that he has a meeting with his creator that's promised. Forget if Goliath kills me. You know why? Because if he kills me, I'm going to the grave. If I go to the grave, I get questioned in the grave. From the grave, I'm either going to hellfire or I'm going to paradise. Period. I got to face my creator. And if I face my creator as a coward who tucked my tail between my legs in the face of death and did not fear the one who could destroy the body and the soul in a lake of fire, then I don't have no right to enter paradise then. I don't have no right to enter the home of God. So think of the ferocity. Even though he humbled, this is why you can't take, this is why when describing Jesus, if you're not describing him in both ways, don't talk about him. Because yes, he was humble. He was humble, but he was not a joke. And when he spoke with authority. And when he marched, people marched behind him. These are the sandals that suit the prophets. So he went out there slinging off. Goliath could not deal with David's speed. By the grace of God, that long swing missed, and David was to hit Goliath with a swing, and when he downed him, he beheaded him. He beheaded Goliath in front of all the Philistine army. Why? Because he remembered who he was, his origin, who was Abraham, who was Moses, who was Enoch, who was Adam. He knew. He didn't go out there with thought or belief. It was confirmation. Wow. Are y'all out of line? He looked at the army. Are y'all losing it? You know what the scriptures say? So what if I'm not big? You know who gave us this? I'm not bowing down army. He's going to make us worship false God, force our customs onto our own, rape our women, pillage our villages, take our resources. No, this day I'm standing. And he stood. And what? He led one of the greatest, if not one of the most powerful armies in time. Had a son named Solomon who was graced with wisdom that nobody else was to be graced with. And God said, I'm going to make it that my Messiah will sit on your throne from your loins. He gave him, if not the greatest gift he can give anyone. Through you, you will always be remembered that the Messiah sat on your throne through your blood. You are forever king. He made David a forever king, not a halftime king, not for a little bit of time. Because your intention was solely for me, even at the face of death, I will give you all. And that is just what I want everybody to know. To remember ourselves is to really know where we came from and to really give back onto Caesar is really to dissect our culture from the past on present and really say, listen, we don't need this. If certain holidays and all that is created, then we can find our original ways of life or channel that money or that energy that we was doing towards maybe a huge family reunion, maybe huge cookout, something, huge feed in the neighborhood, things like that. That would channel one wrong into positive.
So he had no identity crisis because he followed he who created him, and he know who he was, and he know whom he was, and no crisis identity there.
Yeah. Can I add on, if y'all don't mind?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, our brother, Minister Jaquan, you're still there? Okay, yeah, brother, go right ahead.
I wanted to touch on, hey, it's interesting that he had the laundromat. I'm at the laundromat also. That's interesting. I wanted to touch on something that when he was talking about the holidays. I think the mentor was talking about the holidays. And see, this goes back to what I was saying the other night, is that we have been conditioned. You know, I talked about Carter G. Woodson when he talked about the miseducation of the Negro, where they basically have took our brain out and they have conditioned us. We in America, we're conditioned to be spenders. So when you talk about all these holidays and they keep making holidays, when the brother was talking about Christmas, you got to understand Christmas really represents winter solstice. Winter solstice is when the sun sets still on the 21st. It's the longest day of the year. And then for 3 days, the sun sets still. And then on the 25th, the sun started moving again. This is where Christmas comes from.
Man,
this is the 12th. It's actually winter solstice, right? Just like Easter. Easter is also spring solstice, or they call it, well, it's really spring solstice. And that's when the sun starts moving back above the equinox, right? And so it's saying it's rising, right? But these holidays were usually days that they have been worshiping these days for a long time. But what they have done is they have corrupted the days to the point now where all we think about is spin, because in America, we are the engine to keep the train running. You know, in America, we are conditioned to keep the economy running because in a capitalistic society, you got to have spenders and then you got to have sellers, right? You got to have people at the top who own most of everything. Then you got to have the people at the bottom that's fighting. But you're not understanding that you're actually fighting to survive, but also at the same time, you're keeping this economy moving by constantly spending. So what we have to do, I have a lot of proposals. Some things I really don't even want to say out loud in public, but I will tell you one in particular. You know, a lot of times we get EBT, right? And this is just, I'm going to just throw a strategy out there, right? But this is how I think. Well, the government gives us all this money for EBT. Like, why don't we use that money to do something else with it besides just throw it? Just imagine how much money they allocate toward EBT. I'm not going to say what to do because I can't, but I know what really I want to say, but I can't say it. But why don't we use that to do something to build us up instead of allowing it to constantly destroying us, right? Because we constantly use it every month, and then the next month we're waiting on it over and over again. So we're dependent. We're dependent on the system. We're dependent on this money to come. We're dependent on them asking for food. We're dependent on them for shelter. We're dependent on them for everything. If the lights go out right now, are you prepared to survive a month without electricity? Because we're so dependent. That's how they have a condition. That we're so conditioned, that we're so dependent on this government and the system that we could not survive 1 week without power. It would be straight up chaos. People would be breaking the stores. People would be robbing each other because we have lost our sense of survival because we're so dependent. So we have to find a way. And I'm the type of person, I'm a solution-oriented person, right? So if I find a problem, I'm good at finding a solution. Right, so we know that we are one of the, since we are the breadwinners of America, right, we the ones to keep the engine turning, meaning we constantly spend, right? Well, since we know that we're the spenders, why don't we use this to our advantage then? Okay, well, since we constantly spend, let's start changing what we spend our money on. You know what I'm saying? Let's redirect that money to spend it towards something else that will better us in the long haul, right? And this is where I came in with the concept of bringing these products to international trade and bringing products back from the mother continent back here. Because since we're going to spend, go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I want to bring in a man who created the self-reparations program. A lot of African Americans don't understand how that keeps the money in the community and helps us to develop wealth amongst ourselves. Help to make us in terms of helping us to make millions. And I want to bring him on, my brother, my friend, another person I look up to, another mentor. When I was a little boy, I was looking up to him as well. And I'd like to bring on the man himself, Dr. James W. Wimborne. I want to piggyback on what you're saying, Brother Stewart, in terms of keeping the economy within our communities. But there's a mechanism to do that. And Dr. James Wimborne came up with it. Give him a nice hand. Let's have a man.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I love the way these, brother, I love the way these conversations are leading into the next person. So, you know, Brother Stewart was just talking about keeping the money within the community. And there you pop up, brother, and I'm saying, wow. I wouldn't say damn, but you can't say that. I don't know, kids on the radio. But I was saying, wow, you know, with the reparations program, exactly what that's going to do. Brother, you just go right ahead and, you know.
Well, you know, when we talk about the reparations program, our program is what we determine the DIY, the do-it-yourself reparations. It's a self-reparation system that we put together based on the same principle that the brother was talking about, and that's the principle of circulation, where we are, instead of looking at money as spending it, once you spend something, it's gone. But kind of look at it as circulating. and we want to circulate it in our community and amongst ourselves and amongst black people, because we are the largest consumer group there is in this country. Because we buy. We buy. We never have enough money, but we always find a way to buy. We will have, as a people, we will have the best pair of sneakers that's out. We'll have the best this, we'll have the best that. And why do we do that? We do that because, you know, we've been kind of brainwashed into believing that that's what we need to do and that's how we need to be consumers. And we're always on a quest to show people that we have arrived and that we are not enslaved any longer, and we can have the nicest and the finer things of life. And we've been on these quests for so many, many years, but we have to learn how to get back to operating and thinking as a community, as a unit, and thinking of us as one unit, with everyone moving towards the same goal, not just here in America, but black people from all around the world. That's our strength. There is no other larger group of people in the world besides us. The only other people that come close is the Chinese. I want that to sink in. We spend enough money in this country during the course of the year, we would be the sixth largest nation with the money that we spend. What if we was able to take that money and keep it amongst ourselves and spend it amongst ourselves so that we're not giving it away? You know, one of my pet peeves, Dr. Robinson, is when I understood that within the Asian community, money circulates 16 times before it leaves the community.
Wow.
In the so-called Jewish community, the money circulates 23 times before it leaves that circle. In the black community, there is no circulation, people. Statistics will show that we hold on to our money for about 6 hours before it leaves the community, before we're taking it out and giving it to some other group to pay our rent, to buy our hair, to buy our food, and we just take it out. What we've been able to do is to put together a system where we can circulate funds amongst ourselves, where we are asking our members to come in, get in where you can get in. All monies that come in is deposited into the National Negro Treasury, and when your name come up, we're going to give you a little piece of that money. We're going to give you a reparation mission, and we're going to tell you, you take half this money, complete that reparation mission, take the other half and use it at your discretion. Each time you do that, it's going to double. Okay, so if you went on a reparation mission where the mission was to give away 100, use 100 at your discretion, the next mission will be 200. And the next mission will be 4, 8, 16, and so on and so on and so forth. It doubles each time. You want to be a part of this. Now, it takes all of us to be a part of it. It's not anything that you have to continue to sign up for. It's a one-time sign-up fee, and you can sign up for as little as $8, all right, that you can deposit into the Treasury. That will put you in line to be able to go out and do the reparation mission. Listen, what we have created, people, is not a job opportunity, although that we've created income opportunities, but what we're trying to create is a whole new economic system for our people, one that's built with us in mind to create a million black millionaires. This is our goal. We believe that we can do it. We don't know how long it's going to take us, but we have the blueprint. We not only have the book, forget the blueprint. We have the system already figured out and in place and operable already. All you have to do is sign up. So I don't want to take up a whole lot of time, but I encourage each of you to go to the website, which is www.myprojectneo.org. Everyone should know about HARP. We've been on here giving out this website for years. www.myprojectneo.org. That's my, M-Y, project, P-R-O-J-E-C-T, Neo, N-E-O.org. look at the reparation missions that we're sending people on, look at the reparation packages that we have available, pick a package, get in the game, and let's begin to change our lives. And watch the money begin to circulate. We need everybody to be a part of this. So you need to be telling your friends. You need to be telling your family, your mother, your father, sister, your brother, uncle, cousin, everybody need to be in on this, need to be in this system. And watch it, our lives begin to change. That's it. God bless you. Go by, check it out, or give us a call at 888-UNN-CASH. That's 888-UNN-CASH. God bless everybody. I look forward to hearing.
Yeah, and I as well, Dr. Wimbaugh, I want people to understand this: there's different levels of participation in this reparations
right.
program. And so just don't say, you know, you got $100, $1,000. It's an investment into us. It's an investment into the community. It's an investment into your family. If you can ascertain $1 million within a year or 2 years or whatever the time frame is, imagine what you can turn that into. Imagine how you can use that invested in many opportunities, develop your own business, get your own investment tools, get things happening. I want people to remember something. You're investing in yourself. So just don't say, oh, yeah, because a lot of people, Dr. Wimbaugh, would say, oh, yeah, it's $8. Oh, Jesus, you know. And they'll go put $8 when they have $100. They have $500. They have $1,000. They have $100,000. They have a million. Have, you know what I'm saying? You're investing
right.
in yourself. One thing about us as a people, because I know y'all will go out there, if Michael Jordan came out with some sneakers for $300, $400, y'all would find that money. Y'all would go buy it. So I'm not gonna lay my head on that $8 deal. Y'all can do better than that. You can do better than that. You're investing into your family. You're investing into
right.
the lives of black folks all across this country. All of us who claim to be tired of being tired, begging this man here for everything we need. You need to get into this program, and you need to be serious about it. As far as I'm concerned, Dr. Wimbaugh, I know you did the $8 process starting off $8
mm-hmm.
because you were concerned about people who are homeless, people who are on welfare, people who have no money. I understand that, and I appreciate that as well. But I'm saying to them brothers and sisters, I go out there and give $50, $60 for Hennessy, okay? A brother go out there and
right.
cut his hair for $90, all right? The sister go out there and buy nails for $300. Y'all need to really stop it. Y'all need to really stop it. And then you start crying when little Jamal get beat up by the cops talking about racism, but you're not doing anything to get out of it. I'm tired of it. I'm not going to be easy on them no more, Dr. Wimbaugh. You're a good cat. You know, you're just too damn nice. You're like a grandfather. But the fact of the matter is, we got to get serious. You know,
right.
you have children. I have children. You know, you come to that point, you tell yourself, listen, this got to stop right now. You dig where I'm coming from? When you see your
right.
kids over and over again getting into foolishness, and you just grab them and say, listen, this got to finish right now. And you talk to them hard so they understand that you mean business. I mean business. This got to stop. People crying about $8. I told y'all, get into the program. DSNR Consultants will back you up. I'll pay you away for up to $100. If you feel you got in and you ain't got nothing, I'll pay it for you, pay it forward. This is a great opportunity for us as a community to change the conditions of the situation we in. It ain't going to happen by talking. We can talk and talk and talk. And one thing about black people, we can do some good talking. We can make dirt smell like sugar because we know how to talk, okay? But when it comes to implementation, when it comes to really doing it, we are too lackadaisical. We are too slow. We want to wait and see what Dick did, what Tom did. But when they come up with something, y'all running to eat it quick. But when we come up with something, y'all go, oh, well, you know, I'm going to wait and see what happened with you. Don't wait and see what happened with me. Because when I get it, you might not never see me again. But I'm just saying, people, we have to get serious. Seriously, we have to get serious. We got to start taking these programs seriously. Okay? You don't know the level of work it went into getting this thing put together. night and day, Dr. Winborn, working with people in India all night long. It's not simplistic. He put his heart and soul into this because he's concerned. And woe it be that he leaves this earth and not see this thing come to fruition. It doesn't make no sense. We got $2.3 trillion that we letting it go out in the air. It's like taking good money, throwing behind bad money. We have to wake up. We have to get involved. We have to have a system where that money, like Brother Stuart Field was saying, the money got to circulate. But you got to have a system in place to make it circulate. If you don't, it's going to keep going to the barbershop, to the nails, to the Chinese people for pork fried rice and chicken wings. You know what I'm saying? It's the sneaker people, the T-shirt people, everybody else but us. We think about everybody else but us. But I'm telling y'all, you better get it together, turn it loose. And with that said, I'm going to bring in the man himself, Professor Gregory Hall, who said, let's get it together or get the hell out of my face. Mr. Gregory Hall. Let's give a nice hand.
All right, let's get it together. All right, yeah. he kind of added to my phrase, but that's a... That's okay. Okay, seriously, but my thing is really about what I would call creative economics and connecting the dots, because we have a lot of people who don't realize the power of us working together. You know what I'm saying? And we have a lot of individuals. Everybody wants to do their own thing. And in some respects, that is also something that's been programmed in us, you know, to not work together, to be divided. You know the old saying, divide and conquer. But brothers and sisters, it's time to unite. And basically what I just like to explore what I would call creative economics, which will basically entice a person to join forces with someone else, and also economics, which includes everybody, even those people who are dead broke can form alliances. They know people. See, this is the power of this modern technology, the power to connect, and that connecting piece is so important because, you know, the more people that you have, then you can make more things happen faster and more efficiently. And it's simply, as I said, you can people who are into social networking, Facebook and all that, you know what I'm saying, many of them have hundreds and thousands of friends. And imagine if we could somehow connect those dots. So that's where my head is. And that whole process of creating, I don't know what you would call it, cash flow, then we would have more than enough money to finance. Because even projects where the end goal is to help people requires some financing. Let's keep it real. You know, in other words, it takes money to make some money, you know, and this is part of the challenge that we have. But at the end of the day, things can be much, you can accomplish so much more when we simply work together. That's about it.
Thank you so much.
What
else you said?
Dr. Robinson, just let me interject right here. I got a text that Reverend Clark is on 347-478. I know you spoke to him earlier. He was trying to get in. I just want to let you know that that's him at that number.
Okay. All right. Okay. I just wanted to ask Brother Ronald A. Robinson, what's stopping us from collecting that $2.3 trillion and helping develop Africa?
Fear of success, fear of success, fear of failing, fear of looking bad amongst our peers, ignorance. How can you follow somebody to heaven when they're keeping you in hell? You know? They promise you everything and so on, and you believe this. You believe this system, that this is good for you. It's a cancer. And fear and ignorance are the main gatekeepers of this system that's kept us on the welfare rolls, on everything. I can't say enough how we reach always asking for something, and a lot of us never giving it. Because we're afraid of losing. Losing what? We don't have anything. We gave our money away. Now we ask. Now we're going to the city, state, federal government, or FARO to ask them for some help. What sense does that make?
Interesting. Thank you so much for that. We appreciate it. I'm going to open up the mic of Evangelist Sergio Clark. He was representing Mr. Eric Adams, who's running for mayor of New York City. And I guess he has a word for us from the candidate for mayor of New York. The candidate. So, Mr. Evangelist Clark, how are you? So good to have you on. Let's give you a nice hand of applause. So I know you're working in reference with Bob.
Let me speak, Mr. Reverend Robinson. Here's the thing that's going on, okay? I just came out from a heart attack, okay? That wasn't easy, and that came from working in the community and doing things that overtaxed me, and I had a first-class heart attack. I was in ICU for approximately 3 weeks. When you get in ICU, you can even walk and so on. Anyway, the answer is not that right now. The answer is who's going to be the mayor of New York. Hello, can I speak? Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, this is very serious. Hello, can that person get off the line and let me finish? I'm not going to be on too long. I got
there's nobody else talking. Hold on a minute.
Right.
Let me see.
Wait, you heard somebody on the line.
Okay, let me check, see if I can.
My wife is right here, and she heard somebody talk.
Okay, I believe it's clear now, Evangelist Clark.
All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's the situation, okay? We have a mayor de Blasio that's destroyed the police department, okay? He stopped things that were taking guns off the street. So as a result of that, we got two young women that I know, okay, they graduated with high marks on Fordham Road. They were in the park, you know, celebrating. I mean, you know, to have your young girls pass the year of high school and with top achievements. They got shot and killed by their boyfriends fighting each other with guns. Now, a couple blocks away, this lady got shot. A three-year-old died, okay? This is a very situation. And de Blasio sitting back making it, I don't want to get angry because it's bad. Right around where I live, okay, I almost got shot. It's a lucky thing by the face of God that I prayed to the Holy Spirit and I prayed to God and he put that armor protection. This is getting out of control. Not too long, and my wife was going out to pick up some food, you know, and then I told them, use their tooth sprays because they are robbing people. They robbed a 70-year-old woman and stabbed her and took her money. I mean, is this right? Brothers killing brothers every day? It's like my song. My song said, brothers killing brothers every day. All we can say, I'm sorry? No, we could do better than this. So Eric Adamson, who I've known for years, I think you came to the thing now, Reverend Robinson. I think you came to the thing where we had the fundraiser now.
Yes.
All right? Because he grew up in the project. All right? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
He grew up in the project. Okay? So nobody knows the New York like him, being in the project, raised in the project. He got a little abused by the police department in the project, because back in the day, all the precincts were doing all kind of underhanded things, including stop and frisk, you know, just to harass you, okay? And that time, we'd have guns shooting everywhere. Like, I got to be very careful when I go downstairs, because these boys got guns, and they're getting it from Virginia, they're getting it from North Carolina. How I know? Because I've seen one of the guys come out there with his fucking trunk filled with guns and sold them for $200 a piece. This is dangerous because what's happening is the enemy wants us to kill one another, okay? So Harrison is the only person. McGuire, yeah. Now, McGuire is good for the type of person that he is because he helped a lot of people go to college and all that. But we don't need that. Yeah, we could use it. We could be using him for deputy mayor. But the thing is, he's not qualified to be the mayor of New York because the mayor of New York not only got to have an education, but the mayor of New York got to know about policing. And nobody knows about policing but Eric Adamson. He even spoke, but what happened, people say, well, how come he didn't do enough in Brooklyn? Because Mayor de Blasio stopped everybody from Brooklyn to the borough president. Diaz will tell you that over there near where he lived, there were shootouts. You know, I'm scared myself, even having that heart attack. I thank God that he raised me from that, boy, because God is powerful. But the thing is that I'm afraid to even let Cheryl go outside because they might be shooting, right, Cheryl? They were shooting all over the place. So Eric Adamson for mayor, let everybody know that this is a serious, serious situation, okay? I'm not even talking about myself or bragging or whatever. I could be doing that and about my song and all that. It ain't about me. It's about that we want a city that is safe, where you don't have to worry about your grandmother getting killed. You don't have to worry about your wife getting killed by stray bullets because these boys got guns. And let me tell you one thing, Reverend Robinson, I saw it for myself.
Yes.
Right? Because my boy Orlando, he said, oh, they're coming. You know, so everybody got ready. The guy came, went in the parking lot, opened up.
You're there? I think we lost you. Okay.
Oh.
We'll wait till you.
I'm here. Can you
okay.
hear me now?
Great.
Yes.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
So I was right there. Oh, and this is happening everywhere. He came from North Carolina, a Puerto Rican, right? He come down here, opened up his trunk. There was nothing but guns. That had a lot of Smith & Wesson, not a lot of assault weapons, but they had the .44, you know, the ones that really do damage to you when you shoot. That's why these kids are being shot by .44 guns. The police department didn't even carry, we didn't even carry those. We carried Smith & Wesson. Then I forgot the commissioner from transit that he was with Koch, and he opened up and said, no, my men are going to carry 45s. But 45s are loaded. They're not just six shots. They're like 12 to 20 in the barrel. I mean, it's not a barrel either. Okay? So you could shoot. Now, for this guy to sell all the guns, he sold over, he had 100 guns in there. He sold them all. Every one at $200.
Wow.
And then
wow.
he was going to come back again. I'm serious. This is serious. And I saw the guns myself, you know. I tried to like, yeah, you know, I got to get me. You know, I played it off. You know, I played it off like, you know, I was one of them.
Right.
You know, in other words, I spied. And then, not too long after, we heard shooting, and Cheryl said, honey, they're shooting outside. They started shooting already. Just got the gun
wow.
and started shooting. So if I would have went outside, I would have got shot. Anyway, Eric Allison knows. He came from the projects. He worked his way up. He worked his way up from patrolman to captain. And then not only did he do that, but he worked himself up to patrolman and guardian because at that time, most of the black police
officers. Yeah, he was a lieutenant, right? Lieutenant detective.
Lieutenant detective made his rank to captain. Now he, you know, I mean, he's something else. And he knows martial arts just like me and so on. But the thing is, with Eric Adamson is that he got this woman with Mila something whatever talking about she want to be the mayor. First of all, she has no idea what it is to be the mayor. To be the mayor, you gotta be smart. Koch was smart. I met him. I met him at Bellevue Hospital. He was like 6'7". I had to protect him because that was my assignment, and I did. But anyway, back to what I'm saying. The only person, McGuire, I like McGuire, but not for man. Very intelligent man. Helped a lot of young people get scholarships. We don't need that. We need a mayor like, and first of all, we're blessed to have a mayor that is a law enforcement mayor that knows how to stop the stop and frisk. He knows how to stop the stop and frisk that Cox put into place that was abusing a lot of black people. You know, they would just come up on you and stop and frisk and put you through hell. And in some cases, they might put a gun on you. He knows about that because he complained it. And he had to be very careful, just like me, because in the police department, you got to be very careful what you say, because that person could rat you up, and before you know it, you're out the door and all kind of crap. Now, Eric Anderson and myself, Michael Ford, okay, who's working with me right now in the community, which also suffered a mild heart attack. But he came out, and he, Aurelia Green, you remember Aurelia Green Robinson?
Oh, yes. Aurelia Green. Fine. Borough president, Bronx.
Right. Yeah. Well, she was an assemblywoman.
Deputy.
And then she became a pastor. Right. She became a pastor with her husband, James. And then when James was working for the Board of Education as the president of the education, they tried to get him because there was a piano and they was not using it. So he took the piano, right? Next thing you know, they want to put him in jail because he was black. There was a lot of prejudice, man. The other thing, too, I know them because she helped Vanessa Gibson to put a position, you know, like educated her in the politics and so on. And then when Vanessa Gibson came from the office, you know, over there on College Avenue, what happened was she came out the office, and then she wanted to run for a position. So being I was chairman and CEO of Bronx Heights, remember that, Robinson?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, I was chairman and CEO. That means complete control. All right, I got 10 buildings, right? I got like $500 million, okay, that was in the bank account that belonged to to our corporation. That's the kind of thing I was dealing with. And then when I became chairman and CEO, okay, with the 10 buildings, there was a lady named Ms. Buddha that was the treasurer, and she was milking, you know, I did investigation, and she was milking the company to the point that we ended up with $1 million. We were a $500 million company. Oh, man, you know, and that was a different situation because I had, you know, and then she had her sons working for her, all kind of things. The director, Dickinson, that we put in there, he was making $150,000 a year. Imagine the money was spent because we had 10 buildings, right? Remember?
Right.
Robinson, okay. I'm going to get to the point.
Yes.
I don't want to talk on that because I got other people calling me. I got doctors calling me. No,
okay.
But let me get to the point.
Mm-hmm.
The only person that could be the mayor, and so far he's doing good, Chang, Wang Wang, whatever his name is, Chang, he don't know nothing about New York. He don't know nothing about policing. He was forgot what it was in the with Obama. Mm-hmm. Obama didn't even know that much. That's why he got Biden to be his vice president, because he didn't know nothing about the world. How you say the missiles and all the stuff. Biden was in as senator. He was an assemblyman. He became a U.S. senator. He became a congressman. All right, that's how come things are changing now, because under this asshole Trump, we were going to get invaded, you know, and not only invaded by the Russians and the Chinese, but invaded by the white supremacists that were attacking the black people left and right. This bastard tried to get Sherman, what's his name? You know the senator from New York, the U.S. senator? What's his name, Robinson?
Schumer.
You know who got Schumer in that position? Aurelia Green. She got Schumer, and that's why he would come to the meetings. And Vanessa Gibson will tell you. Now, Vanessa Gibson is running for, she's out the city council. She wants to be the borough president of the Bronx. No better place, no better person to have, because we had a white man, Friedman. By the way, we're the ones that brought Diaz. And he'll tell you, borough president Diaz was, when they had a special election because the white borough president was stealing, he took that guy's place for one term. Then it was time for election, and we, Aurelia Green, asked me, he said, Sergio, you got to go to Thessalonians. The pastor there in Thessalonians, have you ever seen Thessalonians, Robinson?
Oh, yes. That church, that, yes.
It's huge. Huge. Yeah. And not only that, they have schools over there. And then you see the other property, they got buildings that's owned by Thessalonians. Hey, that's what you do with a church. You expand it, you know, to help the people. And let me tell you something. Thessalonians, everybody that's here, what there was homeless. They became educated, and, oh, I mean, that's Thessalonians. But let's go back now. So the borough president, he was going to run for mayor. I spoke with Diaz. He said, well, you know, think about running for mayor. But when he saw this bad situation, Ferreira, who was, remember Ferreira?
Yes.
Huh? Okay, remember?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, you know Ferreira, because we went to the meeting with him and Dr. Burkett. Okay,
yes.
Here's what happened. You know, thank God I got Diaz in, because Aurelia Green and, oh boy, there's a couple other politicians that were very strong. They were senators and so on. And they got borough president Diaz in because he was Puerto Rican. So we put a Puerto Rican in there, okay, thank God, because he had the qualifications, and what he needed was a vote. He got the vote from us, and he became the borough president. Now, what's next is this. He said, no, Sergio, I'm not going to run for mayor, because he said, I'm not going to be aggravated. I don't blame him, because being aggravated is something else. And, you know, it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of money to get in. Now, what Adelson had was that in the community that he lived, way before they spoke about it, how he did something similar. Remember community service protection, Robinson?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Remember? I was the director of community service protection, and then I think I put you in there, right? Right or
yes.
Wrong?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
community
yes, you did.
Protection,
yes.
I had JB. JB had 250 backgrounds, and what we did our own policing, because at that time the police was weak and people were getting shot. So we had our martial arts in like every building that was known, you know, for people getting hurt, et cetera. Now, what happened is this, is that that worked, you know, and that building on Grant Avenue, remember, that the Jews abandoned, because what happened, all those buildings out there that the Jews had, you know, they were never paying their taxes. So they owed so much money that all they did is just abandon the buildings. So we had a thing where you, it's called like the homeless just go and take over the place. I forgot the name. That's what was happening. And Alamo, I know him. He was a teacher. And his sister, Juanita Alamo, well, I think you met her, right?
Yes.
At Grand Avenue? She was in charge?
Yes.
Okay. And we got those buildings together. You understand? We protected the neighborhood. That's what I did. And I'm an ex-police officer with special training, you know. And at that time, the Jews were using individuals to burn down the building so they could get the insurance. So, do you remember the guy that was burning down the buildings in the Bronx? Robinson? Because I remember you
yes.
were there. Okay. Now,
yes.
remember what I did. I caught him, right? I caught him. And then when I caught him, right, and we found out that he was a Puerto Rican cop from Puerto Rico that was hired by the Jews. I don't want to talk about Jews like that, but the ones that had problems with their buildings, that owed money, they burned the buildings, and then they get insurance money, and, you know, it's enough for them to, you know, say, okay, I could deal with that. That's what was happening, remember? And what
yes.
happened when the police came there and I grabbed them? I think I put handcuffs on them, I remember. And we walking down. Those Puerto Ricans, boy, they jumped up and pushed. I mean, it was a whole bunch of them. We couldn't believe it. They pushed me down, right? And
right.
I fell down, and then they said, and they grabbed them. This was crazy. They grabbed, I think his name was Fernando, you know, who was a police officer from Santurce, okay? I did all the research and so on. I caught him because I went up, you know, I saw this sneaky guy going up the building. So at that time, yeah, I had community service protection. And then one of the other individuals, Ramon and two others, but they're all martial artists, okay, black belts. We went up. I said, shh, shh. And then I saw the motherfucker. He had a big thing with a flame thing with some gas, and he's getting ready to burn the building. I kicked him with a roundhouse kick in the fucking head. I swear to God, I never felt like killing nobody, but this guy, if we would have got over with just, you know, strengthening the gasoline, and then they got that flame
yes.
thing, you know? Right. So I caught him. And then we brought him down the stairs. Or I think we brought him down the stairs. We crossed the other building, something like that. And when I came down, he was talking with some people. He was yelling out some dumb stuff in Puerto Rican. And the next thing you know, as I came downstairs, we summoned NYPD for backup. We needed backup. We didn't know if it was just him or other people burning down these buildings. So what happened was I came down, I had him handcuffed. And I really was angry, so I think I had him around the neck and handcuffed because he was a dangerous bastard. He was burning down. He burned down seven other buildings. Not just that building. And then he was going to burn down Alamo, too. And, you know, you met Alamo. He's a teacher. And you met his daughter that took over, I forgot, 40-something Grant Avenue. And then that was where we had the office, remember?
Correct.
It was right there. And we had the office.
I want
yeah.
you to keep your memory of the story. Time is
yeah,
coming
listen,
very close.
Let me finish. So this is what I'm
okay.
saying. Right now, we have a dangerous situation. We have people selling guns like they did up in Florida Road. Two young people got shot and killed. We have a baby 3 years old that got shot and killed. All right? This is serious. Right around the corner. And then we have three other individuals that got into a gunfight. Two were shot in the hospital, and the other ones ran off. This is what we
okay.
have in the Bronx. This is what happened in Brooklyn. So listen, I want everybody in Project Neo. I got a whole lot of people in Project Neo now. I told them about the reparation program. They want to join. How much does it cost?
There's no cost, actually. We're just trying to give them a reparation program.
No,
plus
you said it's $8.
I'm going to have to go
to the
next caller
Robinson.
As well.
Robinson, I'm about to finish. So, right, Cheryl, she's voting with me. We're going to early because the last day is the 22nd. Vote for Eric Adamson because none of the other candidates could do what he can do in policing, changing procedures, getting the police out there back in patrol, doing their jobs. And we got a thing called, it's a thing that it tells you all about the officer, if he's prejudiced, where he's from, so they can't get away with this no more. And we had a problem just trying to get that released. So vote for Eric Adamson. Thank God
mm-hmm.
that God has got me out of ICU. Amen.
God bless you.
I'm sure you pray for me, right? And right
Amen.
Now, with Cheryl,
everybody pray
God,
for
okay.
Jojo Clark
and I
as well.
You,
we thank
Robinson,
you for coming on and letting us know about Eric Adams.
I want you to speak about Eric Adams for mayor because McGuire
yes,
can't
I
do
will.
It.
I will.
They don't have the experience. Please. Thank you and good night.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. God bless. Take care. We have the Enigma with us. We're going to bring her on. Y'all know who she is. She comes to the show all the time. She was co-hosting on Thursday nights. Neo Nation Conversations. We're going to bring her on in, give her a nice hand like we do here on the Black Business Billionaires Network Show.
I'm just so thankful. Thank you, Reverend Ron, and thank you, Shaw, and all those who are there. Winborn, it was good to hear you, and knowing that the Federation is going to be doing some good things. And I'm just, you know, I hear the brother, everybody's talking about the elections, but it takes a community, and we haven't had a united community in a long time. You know, and they just coming out of this. We knew that we was going to get guns and gangs going at it. And we know who the gangs are, and we know where they live, and we know who's parents, and we know. So, you know, it takes us to unite and try to come together of all races and, you know, and try to honor our newest holiday. To me, is the oldest holiday I was taught as a child. But you're free now. You got Juneteenth. Aren't y'all celebrating your freedom?
Amen.
No?
Amen.
Okay.
Amen. Let's get
I understand.
Juneteenth. I'm glad you reminded us too. Let's get Juneteenth.
Yes, this is the time
I was telling somebody, Carol, I was telling somebody, you know, we have lots of holidays now, and that's nice. It's symbolic. It's symbolism. But when are we going to get down to, you know, actual change, legislative change?
Oh, that's who you asking me? Stop playing. When is brothers going to be able to start talking to brothers? I mean, it's not like we're in the 60s, even though they want to, you know, pretend through the movies that we're going to repeat all these things and reminisce from the past. But one thing we're not reminiscing about is the unity of our people. We're not united as a people. We're not united, and it takes all of us. And it mainly takes black people who want to be proud to be black and start breaking down things, because all the gun shootings does not include black people. There's different types of blacks. You got your West Indians. You got, you know, your Islanders. You got your, you know, your Chinese. Everybody's got a gun. They selling it. You know, and everybody wants a job, and everybody want to be famous, and everybody want to make a dollar. But nobody's going to give it to you unless they have an opportunity, which, you know, very few people are given. And the Federation is giving opportunities to people, their jobs. We got jobs now. I told Winborn, we got jobs for ex-offenders, but we need a space. And we need a little office space to get them going. We got anger management for those who need anger management. We could connect to Osborne and Wildcat and all the other agencies that deal with certain things. And it's about us taking care of us, just like we did during the epidemic. Nobody took care of us but God and us. So until we learn that, we need to go back to having our own banks and, you know, catering to our neighborhoods and making sure our schools and our community is, you know, fully functioning and making, you know, all the things that they have done behind our back during the covert, making sure that the public housing is evenly, you know, given to people of color, you know, and that we get contracts in our community that for black people to be able to open up an AMP in their community, to be able to open up a little restaurant so we can make it the United Nations, because where I'm at, it's all Hispanics, and I knew, and God bless them, they all decided to unite. And they did it way before that movie came out. Wow. And I'm hoping that, you know, people of color, blacks, Africans, Jamaicans, whatever, Chinese, African, Native American, black, whatever, we start uniting and pulling in other people like Albanians and Asians, you know, and make it a multitask and a multicultural program so we can be united in the United States of America and help with housing, Habitat for America, which the Federation is starting to invest into some real estate, and we're hoping that everything comes through for that so we can be able to put these programs into, you know, motion. So that's what I see us doing, helping our community, helping them get jobs, to work in their community and to open up things in their community, which can stop a whole lot of things, start doing speaking engagements in the schools and getting out here and talking to them and not at them and having them talk to each other. We got a lot of homeless kids in the village. Under 21 is so overwhelmed. We got so much homelessness that is overwhelming parents today. And the gun shooting and carrying on, this is being allowed because the system is feeding them the guns. They're buying it off to the internet and from down south. So anything that Trump run, Trump is going to do his best to show that we're not fit and we don't know how to control or unite our people. And we need to show differently that we do. We got kids out here.
Yes, yes, it's very important. Each one teach one. The Bible said, go a child the way he should go, so he should not depart from that. That means bring your children up in the right way when they're small, so that their minds are molded into a certain kind of behavior, so that when they get older, they're not out of hand. It's too late.
Well, we
kind of
passed that already, Reverend Ron. We're in another generation, and since this covert, which was done on purpose, because these kids aren't dumb. They're far from being ignorant. These are well-educated, computerized kids. They know that the operator is in India and not in Arizona, you know. Most of them know how to hack because most of them know how to they communicate with each other. The Arab kids communicate with the black kids. The Asian kids, they know how to do more than you think. It's not so much the parents anymore. It's about, are we going to keep it real with them? Keep it real with ourselves? Because the bottom line is, they know the hacker is not overseas. They're right here. They're right here, and they have family overseas that they're bringing here. It's not just Russia doing us. We got India. We got all small Africa. Anybody that's here got a family member somewhere else in their country, and they're doing us. That LifeLock thing that everybody is buying and thinking that their computer is secure, that's ran by India. That's not ran by America. So we need to support our kids and computers and getting to know how to protect our businesses and get banks and get up to date. Because it's not about the parents. These kids are past, they done passed all that mentally. They know how to live their own in the street. That most of our adults, didn't you hear the child said, we can't really depend on adults. They're the ones who rape, kill. This is children telling you this. The adults are selling whatever wasn't done in America, they're doing it now. Everybody who don't have a computer is in the street doing what they need to do. Prostitution is on a high. They're letting you know what you can do financially to have sex without having sex. They're the new Zoom generation. And they're not trying to go back to an office and work. They're doing it through Bitcoin. They're not trying to deal with us in that paper. Their paper is way different than ours. So we need to switch up. But I love you.
Love you too, and I thank you for so much coming on and sharing that information with us. You always come on with some facts, some history, some current events, and some ideas for what changed. I'm going to ask everyone now, and we're coming to the final analysis. Brother Gregory Hall, you got one good word for us on this Juneteenth?
Well, simply let's get it together. Let's pool our resources. Let's try to support each other. Let's try to keep the business in the family. And then if God blesses us to be successful, let's not forget to share back with those who are less fortunate.
Great, great, great. Ronald A. Robinson, another one stole my name, A. Ronald A. Robinson, what is your word tonight on Juneteenth? Ronald A. Robinson, you there? Ronald? I guess Ronald left the house. He left the building. Carol Smith.
Yes.
On Juneteenth, what's one good word you can give the family?
Oh, let's stop repeating the same daggone thing. I ain't going to be here the next time y'all sign that paper. So, can we just stay black this one time? Just, say it as they used to say when James Brown was around. Say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. But let's try to keep it together this time and keep knowing, act like we know who we are and where we came from and what we have to do, because you're not going to be 26 in a 65-year-old body. So let's stop that right now and get it together. Be proud you're alive and know that Jesus is the one. No matter crippled, crazy, drunk, or blind, he's your friend. And stay black.
Amen, amen. Wonderful words of wisdom, wonderful words of wisdom. And I'm just going to say, like the Bible say, love God, love yourself, but love your neighbor better than yourself.
Amen.
Mr. Shalik Reed, give us some words of wisdom.
The words of wisdom is that support the Reap More Network show on Saturday nights, and pretty much just remain productive, positive, and purposeful, and love yourself, put God first, and just remember that tomorrow night is a good night for financial advice and financial investments, and keep constantly tuning in to just hear about more guests, and more education pertaining to the Bible, the Word, and finances. With that said, I'll just give you the microphone.
And y'all get ready for more Shalik Reed, because like I told y'all, I am retiring, and y'all going to be hearing more from him. He's going to be hosting the show. hint, hint. Brother going to be hosting the show. I will be somewhere where I don't know where I'm at anyway, but I'll be somewhere in the sun. I'll be somewhere chilling, like the young people say, like my grandson say, chilling. So I'll be there. That's where I'll be. I'll send you videos, Shalik, from the yacht. I'll be waiting for you.
Yeah, that'll be nice. That'll be nice, man. That'll
hey,
nice.
What's up? Carol, I'll send you videos, too, from the yacht.
Okay.
Carol said, I'll see that when I see it.
Let's do what we do.
Definitely.
Okay.
Mr. Gregory Hall, let's get it together and read more. What you got for tomorrow?
Well, okay, tomorrow we'll probably just be discussing some of our future plans. We're still working on the website, which might just be launched by tomorrow, but we also have an idea with an app, a very innovative type of app that we want to get out and circulate, so as we can use this app to help us establish what I would call collective economics, group economics, to make it more doable. So we want to develop our own apps. We're working on that. So we're just going to be sharing some ideas.
Great. Sounds wonderful. People, I want y'all to forget, please go to the website, myMYProject, project, neoneo.org. Check out the reparations program. If you can't afford a number $8, go ahead and do that. But if you can afford $25, $30, $40, $100, $200, $2,000, $1,000, $10,000, don't be cheap. Invest in yourself. Invest in your family. Invest in your children. You know, and don't forget, people, go to Positive, P-O-S-I-T-I-V-E, Change, C-H-A-N-G-E, PC.com. In that site, you're going to learn about the solar energy, clean energy, electric energy. You're going to learn about all of that. You're going to learn about why black folks ain't getting none of that money. You're going to learn about that. You're going to, there is a petition for you to go on and sign the petition and get involved. The petition, we need millions of people to sign it. We're going to submit it to Biden-Harris administration to make sure that 35% of that money that goes into the communities, into the farms, they're going to have solar farms. They're going to finance solar farms. They're going to create jobs. They're going to go to the universities and give these kids 2, 4, 6 year ride. That's a associate's, a bachelor's, a master's, and maybe even a PhD degree in the solar energy. A free ride. Grant money from the government. Don't cost them nothing. We don't want the black colleges and universities, the historical black colleges and universities, the HSBCUs, we don't want them to miss out. So we want to keep Biden alert that we put him in there and we can take him out, but we want him to support the black community, support the poor communities, and make sure things keep going and going and going and going. People, it's so necessary to keep things going. And don't forget, when you sign up for reparations program on myprojectneo.org, when you go on the site and you sign up for the reparations program, don't forget to get blacklisted. Don't forget to look at there's an application form for funding for a business idea, or if you start a business or your brand new business and you need anywhere from $10,000 up to $250,000, don't forget to fill out the application. The Black Business Billionaires Network Club, all the brothers in the Black Business Billionaire Network Club, all the business owners got together and they starting the Black Shark Tank. The Black Shark Tank is going to be offering loans, competitive rates, liberal. We're not going to ask you for all the things that they backed up at the bank, 10 years this and 15 years that, and bank statements and good credit, 900 credit, and how much money your mama got in the bank and what your father got, where that Cadillac, you know. We're not asking all that. We're just asking you to be a participant and a member of the reparations program. Get black. If you are a business, get blacklisted. If you don't have a business, you have intellectual property, you have an idea, you want to do an app, you want to do a movie, a song, you want to do rapping, you want to open up a production company, you want to open up a stage and have performances, whatever you want to do, get in that reparations program, go on the site, fill out the application form, and they'll submit it to the Black Shark Tank, and they will evaluate your idea and your business. And they will offer you financing. So you don't forget to do your budget. So if you say you need $10,000, budget it. So the budget what you need for. You know, don't forget to do your budget, because that will determine the amount of loan that you will get. People, come back next week. Same black channel, same black hour. The Black Business Billionaires Network Club. We have Thursday nights, we have Neo Nation Conversation with Jaquan Diaz. We have Wednesday night, Life, Liberty, and Pursuit of Happiness, Coach Morale. We have Tuesday night, Sharon Steele, the Black Business Sisters are doing it. 40,000 women go from welfare to millionaire. You got to come and listen to that. Then Monday night, we got the Black Alice in Wonderland, Queen Amina. She's a jazz singer. She knows all about astrology, economics. She knows science. She knows everything. And she has a wonderful show with a lot of information. And then on Sunday night, you're there with Sadie Gomez, Local 26, the Women's Auxiliary from the Ethiopian World Federation Incorporated. all at 7 to 9, or you call in 347-857-1311. God bless everyone. Do your best. And Brother Hezekiah Walker says, got to get better because God is in control.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People go.
People
go.
Your life has been out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your song, it will get better.
It's got to get
better. It will get better.
It's gonna be
better. It will get better.
Cause
God is in control,
y'all. Hey. Thank you, Lord. Hey.
Find the praise
within your heart.
Within your heart.
Hold it close.
Hold it close.
Don't ever.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry, your song, it will get better.
It's gotta get
better. It will get better.
It's gonna be
better. It will get better.
Cause God,
God is in
control, y'all. Hey. Thank you, Lord. Hey.
Find the praise
within your heart. Cause God,
your heart.
In your heart.
Hold it close.
Hold it close.
Don't ever
depart. If there's gold in the night.
But you'll be alright.
Fire. Fire. Fire.